Okay, thank you very much. All right, good morning, everyone. It is 10:15, so we will go ahead and get started with this round of meetings on component scores. Again, I'm Nora DeCure with Kearns & West. I will be helping to facilitate today, mostly just helping us mind the time. As with our last round of meetings, we are being webcast, and members of the public are able to participate via email and the webcast. And so to that end, I'm going to review out loud the guidelines for participation that we have in front of us. First off, members of the public are welcome to attend and observe these sessions focused on component scores and ask questions related to component scores during the discussion period, subject to the guidelines and requests from the facilitator. We'll have about 50 minutes for our discussion today, and I will work with our applicant team and staff to make sure that we have time for questions and to allocate that time appropriately. This discussion period is really intended for clarifying questions and not comments or exchanges between public staff and applicants about items not related to component scores. We'll ask everybody in the interest of our 50 minutes, which isn't a lot of time, to be concise and focus on the topic. The meetings are being recorded and will be posted on the website later, and those participating via webcast are able to submit questions via email. The email address is cwc@water.ca.gov. Those email messages will come into Brianna, and she will notify me that we have a question pending, and we will work that into our conversation as time allows. And with that, one note, I know Fiona has mentioned that you have one comment that may apply to all of the items on the list, and while we had thought we would portion things out in about 10-minute increments, we will be flexible in that so that it's appropriate to the conversation that we need to have today. So, Joe, you have a few opening remarks.
Thanks. I just had a couple of points that I wanted to cover. Similar to previous meetings with applicants, we're coming into this meeting not accepting new information or looking for new information. As Nora said, this is really about clarification. Staff is not looking to change the score based on today's conversation. If there are things that staff have missed in the application or the materials that we currently have that we need to go back and review before the commission meeting, we are able to do that and come to the commission meeting with a review of the conversation we had and what staff found in going back and looking at information that we already have. So I just wanted to make that quick clarification for folks. And then the other thing that I wanted to touch on was earlier this week, we let folks know that the information regarding commission determinations would not be released until the 15th, or no later than the 15th of this month. You have a handout on the discretion that the commission has on scoring, but also on there is a list of those determinations that the commission must make, just so you're clear on what we're talking about when I talk about information regarding commission determinations. And we are working on a way to allow folks to ask questions once we release that information. So whether that's some kind of webinar or conference call or another meeting, we're still working on how we wish to do that. I just want to make those few comments.
Great. And one item, I know that while most of us are familiar to one another, we have at least one new member of the technical review team that hasn't participated in the past applicant meetings, and maybe some other folks who haven't attended the last round. So Paula and Fiona, if you wanted to do a quick round of introductions, and then we can do the same.
Sure. I'm Paul Weghorst. I'm the Executive Director of Water Policy with Irvine Ranch Water District.
I'm Fiona Sanchez. I'm the Director of Water Resources for Irvine Ranch Water District and the Project Manager for this proposed project.
I'm Lee Burkfeld with MBK Engineers. I perform the water operations modeling on behalf of IRWD.
Brad Cavallo, Principal Scientist with Kramer Fish Sciences.
I'm Steve Zoig. I'm a Senior Fish Scientist with Kramer Fish Sciences. Brianna Shoemaker, I'm with the Water Commission.
We'll go to Steve.
Steve Hatchett, I'm economics consultant to the Water Commission.
Crystal Davis-Fatke, supervisor of the Water Storage Investment Program for the Department of Fish and Wildlife.
Shem Snyder. Hi, I'm Shem Steiger. I've worked with the Department of Water Resources. I assisted with the uncertainty and resiliency analysis and the technical feasibility review.
And Amy Young, California Water Commission.
Holly Stout, Counsel for the Water Commission.
Thanks, Holly. And let's go just quickly around the room. Yeah, go ahead. Evan. All right, thanks, all. So Amy, go ahead and kick us off with the component scores discussion, please.
Okay, so first we're going to go over the implementation risk score. Reviewers looked at the likelihood of the project being built or operated and gave an implementation risk score for four categories of feasibility, which include technical, economic, financial, and environmental. Reviewers were instructed by the regulations to look at the schedule and the feasibility components, the component requirements that were outlined in the technical reference. So for technical feasibility, reviewers looked at the operations plan, project description, design information, and schedule to determine the risk that the project could be constructed and operated. For financial feasibility, reviewers looked to see if there were sufficient funds available to cover the construction and operation of the project. For economic feasibility, reviewers looked at whether the expected benefits equal or exceed the expected costs, and that's related to the BC ratio. And for environmental feasibility, reviewers looked at the status and schedule of the environmental documentation and permits, as well as significant issues with the project or that would be caused by the project. Each of these items were given a score of 1 to 5 based on the risk of being able to build or operate the project. For projects that had a component showing a high risk, they received 1 point, and for projects with a low risk or and well-supported documentation, that those got up to 5 points. These scores were then added together and normalized to 15 points. And the commission at its meeting at the end of June has the discretion to adjust this category plus or minus 4 points if the reviewer comments are not consistent with the recommended score. And so I will now turn it over for any questions you might have on implementation risk.
Good, and I think I will start with a few questions. Dealing with the financial risk of the project, you had pointed out that there was little to support that there would be the financial ability to pay for the project. Am I interpreting that correctly?
I'm going to turn it over to Steve Hatchett to answer the specific questions.
I don't believe we used that phrase in your review. What we looked at was we're judging it based on, you know, the words in the regulation that Amy
right.
just recited, and we're taking a look at based on the financial feasibility definition that's in the technical reference, where we look at. Have you demonstrated that sufficient funds are available to cover all project costs for its project life, and are the beneficiaries of the non-public costs are they receiving enough benefits that it appears to us that they would be willing to participate at the level needed to cover the costs that are allocated to them? So those are the general parameters that we're looking at, and. If that answers your question,
yeah, that does a pretty good job. You know, the one thing that I want to point out is that, you know, we were asked to submit resolutions that basically commit or basically certified that the agencies or the partners on the project have the funding abilities to be able to pay for the project. Mm-hmm. And both the Rosedale Rio Bravo Water Storage District and Irvine Ranch Water District Board of Directors both made those commitments in their resolutions that indeed they do have the ability to fund the projects. If, you know, the second, we were also made mentions, you know, to the in our applications to existing CAFRs, which are detailed financial documents related to the health of the document of the agencies that are, you know, basically included by reference in the project. We did mention that we have the ability to raise rates, and I think one of the points that one of the comments that I read was that we didn't quantify how much we would have to increase the rates. So even if we had included how much the rates would have gone up, and in fact, with IRWD, it probably would have been in the hundredths of a percent increase in the rates, or even if it came up with something more significant, that you wouldn't have been able to make any kind of judgment as to whether or not that was financially feasible on the community, because that's our responsibility. Mm-hmm. And that comes back again to the commitments that were made in the resolutions. Mm-hmm. That both of the agencies submitted, that it's like, hey, this is something we take very seriously. We've looked at it, and we've got the resources to be able to bring it to bear. So, you know, if that's something you can consider, it basically kind of takes the information that we've already provided and puts it into a little bit different perspective. And
yes, we did consider that, and you know, we made a statement that you have an existing rate base to cover those kinds of costs,
right?
So that's in your favor, but we in our judgment we balance that against the current status is that the identified monetized plus our assessment of potential non-monetized benefits for the non-public beneficiaries, your ratepayers, do not appear to be sufficient to cover the costs that would have to be allocated to them. So that would be, you know, the balance that we're using to come up with our score.
Yeah, and I can appreciate that. But at the same time, I think we pointed out in both our appeal and in the application that the programs that we're putting together with the California Water Commission is just going to be one of the programs that this water banking project would be used for. And so that even though the benefit-cost ratio is less than one, just based upon what's here, we're looking at it as substantially beneficial project based upon the other programs that we'll be able to implement with the project. So it doesn't exactly, you know, the way the benefit-cost ratios were applied fits well within this program, but from our perspective, it's not the whole picture. And
all right. Thank you.
Do you have anything to add there?
The only thing I would add is in looking at other applicants, we noticed that there was one applicant that had not identified the source of their funds for the financial feasibility, but actually scored higher than we did. So we would appreciate the commission maybe taking a look at that, because we couldn't understand how, when we had identified our sources of funds, why we scored lower than the other project.
So, Paul, do you feel like you've gained some insight into Steve's approach
item? I think we had understood that coming into this, but at the same time, I think we wanted to just kind of, you know, shed a little bit different light.
I think so. Also, under implementation risk, I think one of the comments that was made, because implementation risk covers a few things, and we noticed that one of the comments, and I was going to ask maybe Brad or Steve to speak to this, was related to the adaptive management plan and the fact that we had identified that we would work with you, but it wasn't sufficiently. I think the comment, maybe if I'm interpreting it correctly, was that we hadn't sufficiently described it well enough. And I was just wondering if this is the appropriate time, if Brad or Steve could speak to that piece, because we did outline that in the tech memo, I believe.
Fiona, your question then is?
Yes, on the implementation risk, it seemed that we weren't scored so well for the on the technical feasibility piece.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe there's like different pieces to implementation risk. Excuse me if I'm getting ahead, but one of the notes was on the adaptive management plan, and we did have some comments related to that.
So you would like to share more information about your approach to an adaptive management plan?
To clarify why we thought that that was an appropriate approach.
Okay, and then maybe hear from staff after that. Okay, yes, please.
Well, yeah, I guess our primary question is about what was the expectation for the description of adaptive management program that would be acceptable. It was, you know, apparent from the comments that what we had provided was not. We felt that it was, and in my experience, you know, developing even a concept for an adaptive management program is a pretty massive undertaking that you wouldn't undertake until you were actually given a green light for the program. So I thought we did a pretty good job of explaining it from looking at some of the other comments and projects. Seems like we were consistent with that standard. But it would be helpful to understand more about what we may have missed there.
And are we talking about the sentence where it says the management and monitoring program is not sufficiently described, or was I'm trying to figure out which?
Yeah, I'm not sure actually.
Okay,
pardon me.
Well, I can. Shem might be able to answer the question if you have enough information.
Can you repeat the question, Amy? I think we missed.
I'm just trying to find in the review which portion you're specifically talking about. We're talking about technical feasibility.
I thought we were doing implementation risk right now.
Right, in the implementation risk.
Yeah, so it's, if you look at that table 6 on page 6 of 8, it's mm-hmm. the very last sentence in the first block.
The adaptive management plan generally described... And the management and monitoring program is not sufficiently described.
Yes.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure that we were talking about this specific item.
Yes.
Okay. And don't forget to turn on your...
So for this, we were specifically looking for a lot more detail than was provided in this. It looks like only... So we looked at the preliminary operations plan, and there was only about a paragraph described on page 23 where the adaptive management strategy was described, and there just wasn't enough sufficient detail to understand what you guys would be doing, at least in the provided documents that we were able to review.
Okay, so was there, because in our looking at some of the other projects, it seemed like what we had provided was consistent with what was described for other projects. So was it, how were the standards applied? Were they the same? I mean, was there, that's the part that we're having a hard time getting our heads around.
I think what we can say is that each project was looked at individually and by the reviewers, and they did not, you know, take each project and compare it to another project, if that's what you're asking.
So how were standards, you would, even though the projects are different, you would want to maintain criteria
right.
for evaluation that were consistent.
And the reviewers would go back to the regulation, were the words provided in the regulation and score it based on that.
So were there different reviewers for different applicants?
And I'll let Shem answer that one.
No, there were not. We each reviewed each application individually.
The same individuals reviewed all of the applications?
Correct.
So was there any process of going back and ensuring that there was consistency in the way the regulations were applied throughout the?
So let me jump in here. I think part of how the regulations operate is for staff to do the initial review, and then specifically the regulations allow the commission to adjust for consistency across the application. So we're very quickly delving into where the commission has its discretion and. Intentionally, the commission is the one that is supposed to compare these projects across each other.
So inconsistency issues will be dealt with in front of the commission. Okay. We're ready to move on to the next category.
Okay. So Amy, go ahead and resiliency.
Okay, so resiliency. Reviewers looked at quite a few areas to score resiliency, and they specifically looked at the project description, preliminary operations plan, the executive summary, and, of course, the uncertainty analysis. Reviewers evaluated the application materials to determine if the project provides integration and added system flexibility, as well as if the project maintains or increases public benefits in a variety of conditions, including whether it provides high levels of water stored in the system during a drought. Reviewers gave up to 10 points for integration and flexibility and up to 15 points for how the project performs in those future extreme conditions. The scoring component is worth a total of 25. It was not normalized. The commission has the ability at their meeting at the end of June to score up this, to adjust scores up or down up to 6 points if they see that the reviewer comments are not consistent with the score. And for this item, Shem is going to be the person to direct your questions to.
Go ahead, Fiona.
Okay, so there were a couple of points where I just wanted to maybe clarify, first of all, the second paragraph says we did not describe the inclusion of the project in other integrated planning documents. We did describe an aqua study that was done looking at groundwater storage throughout the state, and this project was included in that study. So that was described in our original application.
That was the aqua integration study.
Right. So I wanted to just point that out. And then the other point I wanted to make, also in our original application, we noted that this project could potentially be integrated as a, and it was kind of alluding to that aqua study as well, with other proposed storage projects. And I wasn't sure if that had been considered in this evaluation. I think we had said, for example, other surface storage reservoir projects, and I wasn't sure whether that had been considered in our scoring. And also, I do note here it talks about critical element of biodiversity is water supply reliability, but this is also a joint project with Rosedale, and so provides significant reliability as well to Rosedale and their partners in the Kern area. And then finally, we had noticed that there were a couple of other projects that also, on that point of not describing the inclusion of integrated planning, that they seemed to score a lot higher than we did, or higher than we did. So we weren't understanding why our score was lower. And again, I think it's, you said that maybe before the commission we'd be talking about consistency, so understand that you can't maybe respond to that today, but we're not quite understanding how our scores were really determined. And maybe when we see the information on the 15th, that might be more helpful to us.
So it sounds, Fiona, like you might have a question still there about whether or not the items that you just listed were considered in your
right.
score.
Yes.
So we looked at regulation section 6003A1A, where it specifically asks for a project's inclusion in an integrated regional water management plan, other integrated planning documents or interactions, and we did consider those that you had mentioned as part of that, but we were also looking for a description of that included as part of an existing regional plan, as mentioned in the regulations.
So one thing that was discussed in the application were there are a number of agreements and programs that are already in place to facilitate the project for wheeling and moving water, you know, from the Central Valley into Southern California. So a lot of that footwork that you're talking about need to be done is already laid out and already in operation. So it's that makes it a little bit, you know, I think we're a little bit ahead of having to actually fold the project into some of those planning type documents, because the programs are already operational. Rosedale's conjunctive use program is already operational. Our water banking programs and all the agreements that we have need to be able to move water are already in place. So it's a little bit further down the road than that.
And the conjunctive use project and our water banking project was described in the application, and as Paul said, because they're already in place, they're not in future plans. So we hope we would not be negatively impacted by not having a plan for something because it's already in place.
Fiona and Paul, do you feel like you have enough information on the resiliency scoring?
We would like to, we have some comments on uncertainty, and I'm going to ask Lee to speak to that, please.
And Lee, if you can help us by phrasing it as a question, that would be great.
Okay.
Thank you.
I will do my best. So in Table 5, it was noted that we did not evaluate the 2070 extreme climate change scenarios, and there was modeling provided by the Water Commission with which to do that. So we went back and reviewed the regulation and then the technical reference, and I'll admit that I struggled a little bit reviewing only those two documents to recognize that the Commission staff had produced CalSim models for these two conditions. My review of the technical reference pointed out that there were two global circulation models to be used for this purpose, but I didn't see a recommendation or the availability of the CalSim models at the extreme climate change conditions. So my question would be if you could review that and see if that was clear, because while I did see the regulations required uncertainty analysis related to climate change, we felt that was accomplished by using just the 2030 and the 2070 simulations that the Commission had produced without looking at or even being aware that the Commission had also produced two additional 2070 climate change scenarios that were to be used. So the question being if that could be kind of reviewed. And in that context then, because it was a relatively straightforward assessment, we were able to download that information and take a look at it. And while I understand you're not able to accept or review new information at this time, it'd still be information that we would plan to submit to the Commission, perhaps in a letter to say, you know, here's how our project performs relative to these two extreme climate change conditions to address this issue of uncertainty. So sorry that we missed it the first time around. It seemed a little difficult to know exactly what we were to use to do that analysis on, and we felt we had done it because we looked at the 2030 and the 2070, not recognizing that there were two additional 2070 conditions that needed to be addressed for uncertainty. And the results under those two extreme climate change conditions look very good, which is information that we can submit. We have a handout here to address that, and we'll probably submit that to the Commission separately.
So you found the two extremes when you went back to look. Is that right?
I did, but because I had Table 5 that said look for a 2070 wetter moderate warming and a 2070 drier extreme warming. Okay. And once I had that, I was able to find it.
Okay, so
but when I read the regulation, it didn't mention those. And then when I read the technical reference, it mentioned if you're going to do an extreme climate change scenario, use these two models, which were references to global circulation models. And they didn't use the phrase wetter moderate warming or drier extreme warming. And so once I had Table 5, I was able to track it through.
Okay. So the question you were asking is, can you go back and look at what we wrote in the regulations in terms of clarity of what needed to be used?
Exactly. And see if you could understand how we, frankly, missed it.
We can do that.
Thank you.
Great. Okay. So what's next on the list of questions?
I don't believe we have any more.
I don't think we have any more on that.
We're good with resiliency.
You're good with resiliency. Okay. Very good. So I think we'll have a quick review of the REV score, and then we'll take questions on that.
Yeah. Okay.
So the relative environmental value, the regulations required that for projects' ecosystem benefits, a priority or priorities had to be identified and a worksheet completed for each. The California Department of Fish and Wildlife reviewed the worksheets for each priority as well as the supporting documentation and applied the relative environmental value criteria to each priority claimed to come up with a relative environmental value or REV score. That REV score was then normalized to a maximum of 27 points. And I will hand it back over to you for questions, which I think Crystal can take on. So
Before you go on, Amy, I just think we need to clarify that under the, and I don't know if you said this, but the commission doesn't have discretion here to change points for the REV analysis. That's in the regulations. They can certainly ask staff about how the analysis was done, and we can have that discussion at the commission meeting, but they don't have any point discretion at this under this component.
But if they have the discretion to deal with the way inconsistencies occurred in the way it was applied, then certainly they would have the ability to ask you to go back and take a look at that.
Yeah, they can go ahead. They can do that.
They could do that.
They just don't have a point value that they can tweak from the dais.
Okay, that's good to know. I think we're going to turn this over to Brad for questions on the REVs.
Sure, I'll kick it off. So the primary action that we evaluated and planned the project around, frankly, is the use of pulse flows in the Feather River for the benefit of spring run Chinook salmon, steelhead, and green sturgeon. We did what I felt was a very rigorous analysis of the quantitative benefits that we could expect to spring Chinook based on best available science, using modeling tools and quantitative analyses that are available, showed some benefits. And then, so our review on this question of the magnitude of benefits doesn't really address the analysis that we did. It states about our proposed action and the likely outcomes. A relatively low number of hatchery and natural origin spring run juvenile emigrants are likely to benefit from pulse flows in April. So this was part of the rationale for the score that we received. And of course, there's lots of information in our technical document that support the contrary view of that. I think what makes this point, I can make this point most effectively to you all, is to draw your attention to a different project. And as I understand it, there's at least two other projects that proposed a pulse flow in the Feather River in April to benefit spring Chinook. And about that, about the benefits that you're likely to see for a different project to spring Chinook from a Feather River flow pulse, the analysis says, this documentation supports the claim that providing pulse flows in dry and critically dry years when water is normally less likely to be available would provide a benefit to emigrating hatchery-produced spring-run Chinook smolts. So again, there appears to be some discrepancy maybe in the approach that was used for evaluating among projects, at least looking in from the outside. Maybe more attention to the technical details and support that were provided for the analyses that were conducted. I guess if we have to put this as a question, would it be possible to ask the reviewers to look into that a little bit more closely to make sure that the scores are consistent, using consistent standards?
Good morning. In our magnitude criterion, we're evaluating the change between with and without project. So, you know, we do acknowledge that there is a benefit here, but what you're seeing reflected in this score is the relative low magnitude because there's, between 5 and 7 pulse flows being provided. So that's part of what we're considering. We're also looking at the volume of water being provided. You've mentioned other projects, and yeah, there are 3 projects proposing to provide pulse flows. So something to consider, and what we consider when looking at these projects is the volume of water and the number of pulse flows as well. So that was something I suggest that you consider as you're trying to understand your project relative to others, but that's what we're looking at when we're assessing magnitude.
So when you're assessing the magnitude and assigning the scores, you're looking at all the projects as a whole and placing them relative to each other?
We're not. I'm just offering that up to you for your understanding to think about that when you're trying to look at your project. But how we evaluated these, we evaluated these independently. We had a large suite of reviewers, and not necessarily the same reviewers were reviewing the same projects.
And was there any verification that the individual reviewers were looking at things from a consistent point of view?
We had instructions. We performed trainings with all of our reviewers to ensure that they were looking at the projects the same way.
But there was nobody that went back and looked to make sure that that was true. This is what we're finding is when we look at it, that it indeed there is some pretty serious and significant inconsistencies in the way these things are looked at.
Paul, is there a question in there about right. whether the role of the commission as Holly described before is applicable to the REV score as well?
My question was there anybody that went back to look to make sure that they were indeed applying them consistently?
I have a question maybe, Crystal. So in terms of the magnitude, so one of the criteria on one of the REVs was magnitude.
Yes.
But was that same sort of look at it, was that magnitude then applied as well in looking at how our other REVs were scored? Because it appeared to us that in a low magnitude clearly is a key concept, that it was kind of applied in the other REVs as well, even as evaluation criteria, although it was its own separate criteria. Yeah. So could you answer how that?
So you are right that magnitude did in some aspects carry forward, because when you look at the questions in our ecosystem worksheet, we're asking about the duration of the ecosystem improvement, the resiliency of the improvement. So it follows that if a reviewer thought there was a low magnitude, or if they didn't have confidence in the ecosystem improvement, that is going to carry over into the ability of the project to maintain over a certain duration, or, I mean, these are just general examples, or there'll be less resiliency of that ecosystem improvement if there's lower confidence in it, or if it has a lower magnitude.
Okay.
So it is a standalone criterion, but it is a key concept that in some degree does carry over into the other criterions, because it's all based around that ecosystem improvement.
And I'm going to add maybe Brad or Steve if you have anything to add to that, but you also touched on the uncertainty and the resiliency, and I would like them to touch on if you could respond to how you evaluated the uncertainty that is already built into our model, so that when we were providing survival estimates and things like that, that was already built in. And so what we kind of indicated that we expected to be the benefits are what we truly expected with our uncertainty already built in. And I guess I'm going to ask the very untechnical way, was the uncertainty then, was that sort of like, did you add on to the uncertainty, saying, well, we're uncertain because of the scope of your magnitude, rather than looking at the results and ranges that we've already built into our model? And Steve and Brad, help me out on this one, please, if I haven't phrased that well.
Well, it sounds to me, I think what you're touching on is the issue of that there were analyses that kind of fell under the magnitude of benefits topic that spilled over into uncertainty of benefits. So we were in the uncertainty of benefits category, but still talking about magnitude, that saying, well, that's not a very, the scale the pulse proposed may not have benefits because it's not that big. And that's sort of blending two things together, and I think that's a little bit problematic and hard to understand. On other aspects of uncertainty, I mean, we did include quite a lot of analyses on that, both quantitative and qualitative, that doesn't seem to really have been adequately considered, and again, sort of opinions of the reviewer kind of substituted without acknowledging the analyses that were provided. And again, from what we've been able to see, you know, we provided at least, if not a greater, extensive consideration of uncertainty than some of the other projects, but were dinged for it rather than sort of blessed for it, I guess I would say. For example, we included analyses for the Delta that I don't think others did, and that actually became a point of criticism rather than something that demonstrated that we considered uncertainty. And if I could just quickly go back to the point about magnitude of benefits, understanding, Crystal, your explanation, I think that helps a little bit. I think the challenge for us in understanding the comments is that it doesn't talk about the magnitude of flow or the duration of the pulse. It says it actually refers specifically to the low number of fish that would be affected by having any flow pulse in the month of April. So that's where we're getting confusion. It's like one reviewer seemed to recognize there was a lot of fish in the river in April that would benefit. You can argue about the magnitude of the benefits based on the duration and the size of the pulse, but the fish are there in the month of April. So it's inaccurate to say a few fish would be affected by a pulse in April, which is exactly what comments say about our analysis. So I guess I would encourage folks to take a closer look at that.
So is that, so the question would be, can folks take a closer look at that?
Yes.
Okay.
Is that something you can look at?
I would say that our reviewers reviewed what you put in your application. We are noting here the numbers that you provided, and you're proposing to provide between 5 and 7 pulse flows over the life of the project, and that is reflected in the magnitude score.
Can we talk about that 5 to 7 pulses? Lee, could you speak to that? Because we do have a question about that and how that was looked at by the commission.
Sure. Thanks, Fiona. Kind of going to that, mm-hmm. that confidence, there were multiple comments in the REV review that stated the water operations review only confirmed 5 of the 7 pulse flows, which I assume kind of led into the confidence in this project's ability to provide the benefits as stated. And it's unclear as to whether the CDFW analysis was based on 5 or 7, but I want to go back and talk about that. And the reason why I bring this up is because there are actually comments made in the April 20th staff review of this project's appeal documentation, and they were comments made by the Water Operations Review, which at the time we didn't deal with during the PBR discussion because we were focused on the economics at that point in time. But now they're germane to this issue because of the reliance upon that information. So getting to some of the questions, it's my understanding that the water operations reviewers did not confirm 2 of the pulses due to either low storage in Oroville at the time that a pulse was made or a table A allocation that was less than the threshold that they calculated. And then as a subset of that, that table A threshold related to the project reviewers stating that the losses, and I'm speaking specifically to the conveyance loss of moving the water down the California aqueduct, and the carriage water loss, which is the losses of moving the water across the delta from the Feather River to the export facilities, could it not be attributed to or included in the pulse flow volume? Is this... My question then is this sounding familiar, or do you think that I've characterized that correctly? And then I'll kind of move on next.
And
I can't recall the specifics of the water ops review.
I understand,
but because we are talking about the scores, we're past the PBR review. We did not have staff here today to talk about things that we topics that might have come up in the PBR review.
Okay, so I'll just kind of move on, and
hopefully that's something you could take a look at, because that did not affect our PBR review, which is why we didn't really have a lot of we did talk about it in our appeal, and there's information in there, but it wasn't a hot topic. But it may be impacting our technical scores if it was not looked at or considered. So we just don't know if it it was looked at.
So there was kind of coming back to this issue of the losses and the reviewers stating that the loss could not be included in the pulse flow. That we assumed that they could be. And the reason that we assume that they could be is because the project, the Kern-Fan project, provides water in the California Aqueduct in Kern County. And in order to provide a drop of water in the aqueduct in Kern County, you have to release more than that drop of water out of Oroville, because you have to account for the carriage water losses of bringing it across the Delta, and you have to account for the conveyance losses of moving it down to Kern County. You're avoiding those losses because the water is already in Kern County. So the department doesn't have to release that same loss water, which makes it available for release as part of the pulse flow. So the question would be whether the reviewers could go back and consider that additional piece of information, which I feel is explained in Appendix A to the appeal review document. And I would further add that I think the loss assumptions that the project team made, which total 23%, is a conservative, meaning a low estimate of the loss. A carriage water loss across the Delta is typically higher than 20%, but we assumed a low percentage there so that we didn't overinflate the project's benefits. So if the reviewers could take a look at that and consider that issue.
So it sounds like there was information in the appeal that addressed this particular issue.
I think so, and I think maybe it just wasn't maybe it was missed. There was certainly a lot of information in the appeal. The water operations review comments on the appeal document just state that the reviewers disagree with applicants' assumption that avoided SWP losses can be considered as part of the pulse flows, but it doesn't provide any of the basis for the disagreement, which would be useful to have that understanding. So that assumption then falls into the how many pulses are confirmed or not confirmed. Because if you don't consider the losses, the reviewers stated that we needed to have a higher Table A allocation than what we assumed that we would need to have. But my second point and request for consideration on the reviewers' part is that regardless of how you determine the losses should be accounted or not, somewhat separate from that issue, is that the reviewer said, well, we didn't have a high enough Table A allocation, so we're not going to count this pulse flow. That while we may disagree with the threshold, I understand that. But the logical next step is, well, if we didn't count that pulse flow in this particular year, the water is still physically in the Kern-Fan project. And the next time that there's a critical year, we could look to make a pulse flow. So, for example, I believe that one of the pulse flows that was not considered or not confirmed by the reviewers occurred in 1988. 1988 was the second year of a six-year drought. If you didn't make the pulse flow in that year because the Table A allocation was too low, 1989, 1990, 91, and 92 were all drier critical years when the Table A allocations were higher. And I feel confident that the reviewers could go back to this because I think this is the same sort of information that they looked at the first time. So the water is still physically there. The pulse flow would simply be made in a different year. So to say, well, you analyzed and came up with seven, but we're going to not count two. If we don't count that would have occurred in those years, that may be a debatable point, but the pulse flow may very well still have occurred just in the following year. And this all, of course, goes into your reviewers at CDFW's opinion of the confidence of this project to deliver the pulse flows that were analyzed. So the request, again, is to look at two specific things. The first being the assumption on the saved losses that this project creates by having the water already in Kern County in a critical year. Right? We don't, you release more than that volume of water from Oroville, so that volume of water is available for a pulse flow. The second being, if we say that we're not going to count a pulse flow in one particular year, it can simply mean that the pulse flow gets made in a subsequent year. So the overall number of pulse flows is the same between what we analyzed. They may just occur in a different year, applying the criteria that I understand the reviewers to have applied in the April 20th analysis.
And Lee, I'm sorry to interrupt, but we have about 5 minutes left before we need to start talking about the June meeting. Okay, yeah. Very good. So any final questions, Paul and Fiona, on the PBR?
I had one quick question just back on the revs. Our question was on page 1 of 8 on the rev analysis. It states that the steelhead were identified as a target species but insufficient data. And so my question is, did the reviewers take a look at the steelhead analysis submitted with the PBR appeal package?
We did not evaluate the analysis that was submitted as part of the appeal because it wasn't in response to an issue that we raised as part of the PBR, so it wasn't considered in our analysis.
But if there's information that was included in that that's pertinent to your analysis, it's something that should be considered, shouldn't it? Would it not?
The regulations were clear that we could only consider information submitted upon appeal that was in response to a question or concern that we raised. And the additional steelhead analysis that was submitted upon appeal did not respond to any question that the department raised. And I just wanted to briefly say, Fiona, I don't think I answered your question about resiliency. We went to talk about uncertainty, but I would just refer you back to the ecosystem worksheet and what it asks for. So it's talking about how was uncertainty associated with the priority considered in project siting design and operation? And then if you look back at our comments, you know, one thing we raised is that there were minimal operational adjustments that can be made to ensure the proposed pulse flow would occur because the project relies on the availability, storage, and accrual of Article 21 water to produce a pulse flow. So I just wanted to kind of point that out as kind of, you know, asking as what we're looking at and evaluating as far as resiliency. So that's, you know, I point you to the questions we asked in our worksheet and then back to the comments we made in response to the information provided.
So I just want to clarify that the Article 21 water, yes, provides the water for the project, but it's dependent on us having water in the water bank, so they don't necessarily have to occur in the same year. And I want to make sure and just ask if that was the way it was interpreted.
We interpreted that pulse flows would be provided if water was accrued as you described in your application.
Okay.
Which was in the bank. So.
Okay. Paul, we had one last question.
Yeah, I have
on the
two
PBR.
Quick things is that there were things that were considered during the PBR process that altered our non-public benefits. I just want to make sure that was followed through when you considered the
all other additional information that was a response to concerns we raised or the other reviewing teams. We did take a look at all that new information. It was submitted to our reviewers, and they had the opportunity to adjust or modify their scores and comments accordingly based on new information.
Okay, I appreciate it. Go ahead.
Were the non-public benefits adjusted with the value of water that was adjusted on the public benefits side of the PBR?
I'm sorry, I think I followed your question.
So maybe it's a question for Steve. In the PBR analysis, it's at one point the commission or staff recommended that the value of water be adjusted on the public benefit side. Did that adjustment and recognition of the change in the value of water, was that also equally applied in the quantification of the non-public benefits?
Are you asking about the pulse flow adjustment? The number of pulse flow adjustment? I'm not sure what you're asking.
So our non-public benefits also have a linkage to the value of water, and because the value of water was changed on the public side, was it also considered in recalculating a non-public side?
I'd have to go back and look at that.
That affects the benefit-cost ratio that was used in this analysis. If you could look at that, that would be great.
We'll look at that.
Thank you. Then the one last question, I want to circle back. There was one question that I asked that didn't get answered. I know it's not a real comfortable question, but I think it's an important question. You expressed that there were different reviewers that looked at each of the projects, and that they had training on how to apply the regs and conducting their reviews. My question was there somebody after the fact that looked to make sure that the reviewers did indeed apply the regulations correctly?
Well, they submitted their scores and comments. If we had any clarifying questions, we could speak to our reviewers, but we accepted their scores and their comments as representative of their evaluation.
So there was no review to ensure that the regulations were applied correctly in making the scores.
Well, the regulations say, you know, we're evaluating the change between with and without project. We're looking at modeling data. We're looking at the information received. I mean, and then we have guidance on what our criterion mean. We have a point scale.
So, Crystal, was there a management review that went with these reviews?
There was a management review.
Of each of the.
Yes.
Was it the same managers that reviewed all of them?
It was.
Okay.
All right. Thank you both. Thank you. I think at this point in time, we do want to ask Jennifer to come up and tell us a little bit more about the June Commission meeting.
Yes. The red light means on.
It's on. Okay. It's on. So we are putting the agenda together for the June meeting. It is not firm yet, but what we think we will be doing will be somewhat different than how things went in May, in that in May the commission went project by project but made only conditional or tentative decisions before then looping back and making all the decisions after having heard all the projects. And in June, what we're probably going to do is the commission will look at each project individually and vote on finalizing the scores and making the required determinations, and then move on to the next project. We're thinking that the order of go will be in order of points highest, starting with the highest scoring project and going in descending order. So at this point, it does look like it will be 3 days, maybe not a full 3 days, but at least 2.5. And we will release the agenda on June 15th, and we'll have the order of the projects and the days in which the projects will be heard. Although we probably can't be real specific on time, we're guesstimating roughly 1.5 hours per project. And there will be a staff presentation followed by an applicant presentation followed by public comment. We will allow the pooled public comment process like we had in May, and then commission discussion.
And how long will our presentation be, or has that been determined yet?
I think we're still kind of fine-tuning what we think, how that's going to run. I mean, the other thing that I would probably add to what Jennifer is saying is we'll certainly consider what folks are bringing up here in terms of how we design the interactions on the June meeting as well.
So we'll get later you'll give us some...
Yeah, we'll firm things up and release something soon.
If you have questions, suggestions, comments, let us know. Like I said, this is still being formed.
I have a quick question. Do you know, is there a date by which, if we wanted to submit a public comment letter, we could do that?
The meeting starts the 27th, and I think probably close of business the previous Friday, because the meeting starts on Wednesday.
Very good. Any other questions? The way you handled the last meeting was really quite extraordinary. It was impressive. Y'all did a great job. It's a difficult process, but
All right. Well, Paul, if you don't have any other final questions, I think we're able to wrap up. And for folks who are tuning in online, the next meeting will convene at 11:30.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, we can still make it.
You want to try it?
I got one.
You got one?
Yeah. Just the 15 copies.
Perfect.
I am helping to facilitate today. Microphones are on when the light is red, and there's a button on the side. So quickly, because we have folks following along via webcast, I will review the meeting guidelines that we have in front of us and outline the opportunities for online participation. Members of the public are welcome to attend and observe sessions focused on component scores and to ask questions related to the scores during the designated discussion period, subject to the guidelines and requests of the facilitator. We have about 50 minutes today in our discussion period. That is the bulk of the meeting. And applicant questions will be posed first, but I will make an effort to intersperse those with any questions that we may get either here in the room or via the email address from members of the public. The discussion period is focused on clarifying questions to help everyone to better understand the component scores. So please help us in making an effort to focus on questions rather than comments on the scores. We do have a fairly brief period of time, and while we've set aside a approximately 10-minute increments for each score, we are flexible and we will work with you to make sure that we are able to fit in the questions that you have. For those who are participating via webcast, the email address is cwc@water.ca.gov. If you do submit a question online, that will come in to my colleague Brianna here. She will alert me and we will work it into the conversation as time allows. I think we will do a quick round of introductions for any new faces here around the table. And again, I apologize for the somewhat uncomfortable setup here this morning, but we will work with it. So Brianna, why don't we start with you? We'll go that way to the applicant team and circle back through staff and then the rest of the room.
I'm Brianna Shoemaker. I'm with the Water Commission.
Mark Ashenfelter with GEI.
Jason Pivovarov with Inland Empire Utilities Agency.
Roger Putty with GEI.
Holly Stout with the Water Commission.
Joe Yen with the Water Commission.
Amy Young, Water Commission.
Shem Steiger with DWR.
Crystal Davis-Fatke, California Department of Fish and Wildlife.
Steve Hatchett, Economic Consultant to the Water Commission.
Thank you. Brandon? All right, thanks all. So Joe, I think you have a few remarks for us.
Morning. I just want to make a few points before we get started. As in previous meetings that we've had with applicants during this process, in this meeting, we're not really accepting new information. We're not anticipating that we are changing our scores based on our conversation. That's really going to happen at the commission meeting. If there are things that we missed in our review that you are pointing out and we have that information in your application, we are happy to go back and look and then come into the commission meeting and give the commission our recommendation based on our conversation and our review of that existing information. The only other point that I would like to make right now is earlier this week we notified applicants that we would not be releasing the determination information that the commission will use to make their determinations at the June meeting until the 15th of this month. On the handout that you have before you that goes over some of the commission discretion, there is a list of those determinations just in case people are wondering what kind of information we are releasing. So with that, we can move on.
Thank you. So Amy will help get us oriented here with each of the scores, and then Roger and team will turn it over to you for some questions.
Okay, so we're going to start with implementation risk. Reviewers looked at the likelihood of the project being built or operated and gave an implementation risk score for four categories of feasibility, which include technical, financial, economic, and environmental. Reviewers were instructed by the regulations to look at the schedule and the feasibility component requirements in the technical reference. For technical feasibility, reviewers looked at the operations plan, design information, project description, schedule to determine the risk that the project could be constructed or operated. For financial feasibility, reviewers looked at the risk of sufficient funding being available to cover the construction and operation of the project. For economic feasibility, reviewers looked at whether the expected benefits equal or exceed the expected costs, which is also the BC ratio. And for environmental feasibility, reviewers looked at the status and schedule of the environmental documentation and the permits, as well as significant issues of the project. Each of these items were given a score of 1 to 5. Based on the risk of being able to build and operate the project. For projects that had a component showing a high risk, they received 1 point. And for projects with low risk and well-supported documentation, they could get up to 5 points. These scores were then added together and then normalized to 15 points. So the commission at the end of their meeting at the end of June, they have the discretion to adjust this category plus or minus 4 points, and that would be based on if the reviewer comments were not consistent with the scores, the recommended scores. So I will turn it over to you if you have any questions on implementation risk.
Well, thank you. First, I want to say thank you for this opportunity and the interaction that's being provided from the commission staff and the different applicants. Before we get going, I did want to mention that we do have a supplemental letter in to help clarify some of the additional information that was sort of requested through this technical review process. That letter was dated June 4th to Mr. Joe Yun, and we have hard copies here that I'd like to leave behind to sort of supplement our discussions today. And so for the first part under this component, in regards to the technical feasibility score for the adaptive management strategies related to the local water supply, the project also submitted a letter back in April to help clarify the sources of supply for this project. This project is looking at local supplies, which we'll then use to treat that water and store it in the groundwater basin. And so initial application used sort of agreements with upstream river discharges to work out partnerships for those sources of supply. In April, we submitted clarification as to that is sort of our plan B, and the plan A strategy for sources for this project will include interconnections with our neighboring agencies for recycled water, contaminated groundwater, industrial waste discharges, and also growth in the region. We're expecting another 300,000 to 500,000 people over the next 20, 25 years, which equates to additional wastewater, recycled water flows for this facility. So we ask that letter and those additional clarifications be included as part of this this review process.
Okay.
Let's see. Yeah.
I'll just add to some of Jason's comments that with the additional supplies that we've discussed that add flexibility to this program, we believe that it provides greater adaptability to managing those supplies to add greater certainty to the recharge supply that's going to be provided to Chino Basin. So I think that helps address the question of how this program would be able to adapt to different conditions. And then also there was a comment about the Chino Basin operation, and we would just like to point out that there has also been a Chino Basin storage framework that's been developed since the application was submitted. It's being developed and it's in process, and that storage framework is intended to provide the kind of operational conditions that the program that IEUA is proposing. And so that storage framework, again, helps address how the program will adapt to different conditions as that basin operation occurs throughout the life of the project.
So, Roger and Jason, I know you've just referenced a letter that you have submitted. Are there particular questions that are posed in the letter that you would like to convey to staff right now, or did you have a question about how the letter will be considered itself?
Yes, I mean, as if the letter would be considered, and if that letter is considered sort of the corresponding benefits to the scoring provided for the Chino Basin project.
So I think we're good at looking at what the letter is and considering whether or not we can use that and then summarizing that for the commission and bringing that forward to the commission. So it's not that we'll provide an answer today or before the commission meeting, but we can certainly look at it and take that into consideration.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Joe.
Do we want to get into the ecosystem stuff?
Oh, that is working. Under the technical feasibility portion of the implementation risk score, I had a couple of specific questions regarding the technical review document. There's four bullet points that appears on how that was scored on page 6 of 9. I don't know if you have that all right in front of you. I'd imagine you do. It says how operations will be monitored to ensure public benefit outcomes. It says generally supported. And preliminary adaptive management strategies not supported. I'd point out that in our REV scores from CDFW, our adaptive management scores were pretty good comparatively to other applicants. I want to make sure that the review of the technical feasibility took into account the ecosystem adaptive management portions and that was used to score consistently. I guess the question was, were portions in the ecosystem application portion transferred over to the technical feasibility folks that would have been doing that review? Or is that a potential of missed information?
Right. So I'm going to hand this over to Shem, who can answer how the implementation risk for this section for technical feasibility was reviewed.
So we did consider the entire application that was provided, and we did receive your letter, so this is something we can go back and look at.
For clarification, was that originally taken into account to your knowledge, or was it found to be insufficient, I guess would be the question?
Because it's a large application, it's possible that it might have been gleaned over, so it was considered. But because of the depth of analysis that was done for the entire document, this is something we can go back and look at for the commission.
Good?
Yeah. So there's three other components. I just want to do a time check. Do we have time to cover those other three?
Okay.
Or did you have other questions on implementation? You want to go move on to feasibility? Financial or economic or environmental?
Three other components within within the implementation. Sorry, I didn't clarify.
Yeah, so really quickly for the financial feasibility component, the original application did not include any evaluation as to alternative funding sources. As the reason for this was that the approved funding amount was unknown at this time. The project did go back and evaluate the options for additional funding to fill sort of this gap at the request versus the original application request. Details are provided in our June 4th letter, but we do have a cost of service that was completed back in 2015, which is referenced in the original application, which shows the different mechanisms that the agency currently has to fund projects of this type through the various water rates, connection fees, and even outside funding that that the agency has been very successful at securing. And we ask that letter and the details also possibly help clarify sort of the uncertainty in this component, in this category.
And we do have Steve Hatchett available too, if you had any specific questions you wanted to ask about whether that was actually reviewed or not in the analysis.
Yes, of course. We reviewed all of the information that you provided regarding, financial plans and revenue mechanisms that you just mentioned. That, of course, is worked in your favor. As part of our review, then we. We considered both that and the sort of the general status of the costs that are allocated to the non-public beneficiaries versus the benefits that are currently being shown. And this refers back to the definition of financial feasibility in the technical reference. So we looked at those two items. Yes, you do have a very reliable standard, a good rate base. You have a record of good financial performance. But we have this apparent gap as the application currently stands, and we understand that, between what the benefits to the non-public participants, your ratepayers, and the costs that appear necessary to allocate to them. So that's a criterion that we use as part of our score. We'll certainly look at what you provided in your letter to and advise the commission if anything changes.
So it's, is it that the BC valuation sort of aligns with the scoring provided under the financial feasibility or technical?
For financial feasibility, we're looking at individual components, if you want to think of it that way, of the overall benefits and costs. So we want to look at, are there sufficient payment mechanisms identified to cover the entire cost of the project, obviously. But then we look at the components, and in particular, we're looking here at the, are the non-public beneficiaries allocated about the same or more or significantly more costs than the benefits that are currently being shown that accrue to them. And so we take that issue that we as it currently stands and weigh that against the other information that you provided. So for financial feasibility, we're digging down and looking at individual beneficiary groups, if you will, as part of the overall financial.
So for clarification, okay. That would have been something that we would consider as part of our cost of service study, to find that nexus between the ratepayers and existing and future. So that was something that we did identify in the application, that a revised cost of service study would be completed in the next year to update our 2015 application.
We understand that. We can only make our recommendation and scoring based on, what's in the application at this time. Yeah.
Okay. Thanks for that, Steve. this one probably is maybe for Steve as well. We just have a few questions regarding the economic feasibility component. So it was noted in the technical review document that the total BC ratio was found to be 0.47. And so we took a look at the spreadsheet, the economic spreadsheet, at least the latest one that we could find on the Commission's site, and compared that with the benefits and cost calculation that we have for our project. And we believe that there's a couple of things. There are some differences. One is in the non-public cost calculations. We think that the calculations for our project are correct, and that there might be some issues with the way the calculations are, at least in that spreadsheet that we found online. So that's one item. And then secondarily, we think also possibly there's a present value function that's used in Excel, and perhaps there might have been some discrepancies, or at least there's differences in terms of how we apply that function versus how the commission staff applied it. So the result of those two issues is that we calculate our BC to be 0.6. So we just would like the staff to either comment on or consider that as they move forward with reviewing our comments. Just one last comment. As Jason mentioned earlier, there is a opportunity here for the project to benefit from a combination of sources of water for recharge for the basin, different than we had proposed in the original application, and this is something that's been discussed in the appeal letter as well as a subsequent letter in April. And so with that, the water acquisition costs associated with that previous supply would not apply now to our cost of the project, and so that would raise our BC ratio to 0.66.
We are looking at the points you raised in your letter, and we will consider them and certainly advise the commission on any effect that would have on our scoring. We've always, encouraged applicants to point out differences of or misinterpretations that we may have, and we always adjust as we find those that are legitimate questions. So without commenting on any of the particular issues you raised, yes, we are definitely looking at that, and we'll advise the commission. You mentioned at the end of your question maybe a different way or a different source of acquiring water for the project or related to the project, and I would just reiterate what Joe said earlier, is that we're not staff is not accepting new information that differs from what was in your original application at this point in time. So then one final comment, to the extent that we review the points you made and the range of the benefit cost ratio that you just cited would not in itself affect the score that we have. It's still where benefits are substantially less than costs. So, but we will look at what you raised.
Okay, thank you. I guess the cost of the project might be a little lower if you were to consider the adjustments, so that may affect the financial feasibility a bit. But
okay.
Just, we'll keep this one very brief. The environmental feasibility component, there was a question about the status of the permitting applications, and we just want to make the point that in our letter in April, and submitted to the Commission April 26th, that there was additional discussion about the status of environmental documentation, and so we just ask that the staff consider that.
And I think that if that was in response to a PBR comment, that could have been reviewed. If it was not, then it was not part of the review of that item.
Yep. So we need to just clarify what was and what was not included in the scoring criteria here, because I think it's and what we can and can't do at this point. In terms of the letter that was received on June 4th, or that's dated June 4th, really the most we can do is look at it and advise the commission about what it says. The scores are where they are. And to the extent that there is new information in that letter, we're going to be limited to what we can do with it. The same is likely true with the April 26th letter. I don't have it in front of me, unfortunately, but that information would be after the appeal was due and after even our meeting in April, as I recall. I don't have my calendar in front of me. So just be aware that while there may be new information coming in through those letters or new pointings to other places, we are kind of stuck with the technical review as it is today.
Are we making good progress through the questions you have?
Very helpful.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay, so we'll move on to resiliency, if that's okay. So reviewers looked at quite a few areas to score resiliency. They specifically looked at the project description, the preliminary operations plan, the executive summary, and uncertainty analysis. Reviewers evaluated the application materials to determine if the project provides integration and added system flexibility, as well as if the project maintains or increases public benefits in a variety of conditions, and as well as, you know, the water stored during a drought. Reviewers gave up to 10 points for integration and flexibility and up to 15 points for how well the project performs in those extreme conditions or scenarios. This scoring component is worth a total of 25 points and was not normalized. The commission has the ability at their meeting in June to adjust the score up or down up to 6 points. If the reviewer comments are not consistent with the recommended score.
All right, so the first one, really brief here, it was in response to did not include integrated planning documents. And I just wanted to provide some context as to what our 2015 Integrated Water Resources Plan was. This was referenced in the original application. The 2015 IRP was a comprehensive sort of holistic look at 14-plus local, regional, larger-scale individual planning efforts that combined it into one focused sort of outlook for the region. Local agencies, local water purveyors were part of that. Agencies such as that sort of managed the watershed, the Santa Ana watershed, were also participants in that effort, along with larger regional wholesale agencies such as Metropolitan Water. We incorporated all of those efforts into this 2015 IRP, which was sort of the backbone for how this sort of concept came to fruition for us today. So I just want to provide some context as to what that 2015 IRP document was.
Was there a specific question to the reviewers?
Just clarification as to what that 2015 IRP document was. There wasn't just want to provide clarification.
Well, and I guess maybe the question would be, was the staff aware that all of these other documents were integrated and incorporated as part of that overall plan? So we did. There was a reference to multiple planning efforts as a result of referencing the IRP.
And Shem can also answer the questions about resiliency.
Yes, that is something we looked at, and it's something, again, we can go back and look at again just a little bit closer with context that you provided for the commission.
Thank you.
Okay, and then the next component is the uncertainty component, and so this one gets pretty complicated pretty quick, so I'll try to keep it high level initially. But we did provide a lot of what we thought was additional discussion and clarification in our June 4th letter about this component. But essentially, I think part of the concern here by the commission was that the hydrologic conditions and the future extreme scenarios under 2070 were not necessarily directly addressed in our application. And so we want to make a couple of comments and then pose a question to the commission staff. And so that is that our comment is that we believe the nature of this program, because it is reliant upon recycled water and a groundwater basin and very resilient combination of elements there that make it mostly, if not all, independent of hydrologic variability and future conditions affected by climate change. And so because of the strong resiliency of these elements, we assumed the analysis of looking at these future varied hydrologic conditions really wasn't directly applicable to the nature of this kind of project. You know, regretfully, we didn't provide a lot of clarification in the application about that. But we feel that the analysis wouldn't have necessarily yielded a lot of additional insight to how the project is affected by those conditions because of the hydrologic independence. So I guess the question would be, how might the staff have used that information to help in the scoring? Would we have included it? How would it have benefited the assessment that the staff completed? I see a lot of puzzled faces. So.
I think it's, well, you're asking a question, what would we have thought if we had received that information? And I think we would have reviewed that information and scored it accordingly, but that information, if it wasn't there, we couldn't review it and score it.
I think maybe part of the answer that to the question that I think you're asking.
I told you it was complicated.
Is that part of the analysis, and Shem, correct me if I'm wrong, but part of our analysis was really looking at how the public benefit would be affected, or the project's ability to produce the public benefit would be affected under those conditions. And so, to me, part of the question you just asked and the statement that you made referred to the resiliency of the groundwater portion of the project. However, to produce the public benefit in this specific case, I think you're dependent on another factor that is not directly related to what's in your bank at that time.
And so if that's the connection to the supplies that would be a part of the exchange in this program, we did address that question in the appeal and provided additional information about the ability to make those exchanges and the likelihood that the state water project allocation would be able to support those exchanges in dry and critical years. And so that was part of our comment and our June 4th letter was to consider that, because I realize that we have looked at things past the appeal date and further confirmed some of this, but if you needed to go back to something that does discuss, I think, what you were bringing up, Joe, that is in there. And so I guess that would be one of our asks, is to review that and see if that helps answer how we would have assessed that question.
Okay.
We could move on to relative environmental value if you like, and then
I
circle
do
back.
Just have one question. And under the uncertainty, and this might be off base a little bit, but how was the source of water comparatively taken into effect versus some of the other projects, and how that scoring was derived? When I look at something saying that this is uncertain, and we've got a fairly certain source of water for the project, it doesn't
overarchingly compute for me that, you know, when you're relying on a project for, you know, essentially people flushing toilets versus other ones that are, you know, on California hydrology, it seems like that would score really high just on the surface. So I guess from an overarching standpoint, how was that just kind of taken into account, or was it?
So in regulations section 6004A8, we're looking specifically at the public physical benefits. So while we do appreciate that the recycled water is a firm source of supply, we're looking more at the uncertainty associated with the physical benefits of the project.
Okay, so to the next component. All right, Amy.
Okay. So the regulations required that for the project's ecosystem benefit, a priority or priorities had to be identified and a worksheet completed for each. In the same way, if a project had water quality benefits, a priority was identified and a table completed for each. All projects had ecosystem benefits and were scored by Department of Fish and Wildlife to receive a relative environmental value, or REV, score. If a project identified a water quality benefit, the State Water Board reviewed that information and gave it a water quality REV. Both agencies reviewed the worksheets and tables as well as supporting documentation and applied the relative environmental value criteria to each priority claimed to come up with a REV score. The two scores together were worth up to 27 points, and in this case, the project had both, so the score was split 70%, 30% between the two. The score was then normalized to 27 points. While the commission does not have the discretion to adjust the score at the meeting at the end of June, they may ask questions about this item. So if you have any questions about REV, we can take those right now. And Crystal will answer any questions from Fish and Wildlife, and if you have questions for Water Board, we can have staff available for that as well.
So if you guys will be reviewing that June 4 letter, we provided some additional information. I think it's Rev 7, if I'm correct off the hip here, which is consistency with plans. We elaborated on that a little further. We don't need to go through each one of those and discuss. We don't need to bore everybody to death on that one. But we provided a further checklist of how it's consistent with other plans, and hopefully that's considered. I would like to discuss, because it's it overarches a couple of different of the REVs, specifically two, which is the magnitude it's mentioned, criterion three, spatial and temporal. It appears as if points were being deducted for the timing of pulse flows with the hatchery spring run versus timing with the natural out-migration period for the in-river production. It was never pointed out in the technical reference that was ever a distinction to be made. So to be having that used against now at this point, I don't think makes much sense. Further, the ESA doesn't discriminate between the hatchery spring run and in-river production.
Is your question, were points deducted?
Were points deducted based on that? And as well as when we speak to adaptive management, we definitely could discuss at future times altering how that is managed, you know, whether that is something to look at for a different time period. I just think a holistic look at that would score it differently if those are areas where points were being deducted.
So with magnitude, one of the main considerations is looking at the change in with and without projects. So you have a relatively high score for magnitude. And you're right, you know, we do note timing here in our comments. You know, it was something that was flagged by reviewers But I would really look at the number of pulse flows provided as probably the most reflective of your magnitude score. So, you know, there's...
Not to be argumentative, but I guess that's where the adaptive management comes in that we've all discussed and have looked at as, I mean, I know repeatedly it says duration, timing, magnitude is something, you know, if we would like to do 10 smaller pulses instead of 5 big, you know, I'm just making numbers off the top of my head, but that is certainly something that I think is addressed there. And I don't want to spend too much time. I see we're 4.5 out of 5, but I just think that those are points. If that was the area that the timing was coincident with the hatchery smolts, that was a point in which I don't think that is a fair assessment.
Mark, is there a question in there, or should we move on to the next one?
No.
Okay.
No question there, sorry.
Okay. So we're at about 12:10, and at 12:25, we want to transition to hearing about the June meeting.
I did have one more on criterion 8, the location and ecosystem improvements and connectivity to areas. What did score a 5 in that? I fail to see how the Feather River is not considered to be a location that would be of primary importance.
I would point you back to the ecosystem worksheet and the questions in there. So, for example, we ask for the applicant to explain... I'm sorry, this is for priority 2. So I would just point back to the ecosystem worksheet and the questions there. So it's not a matter of the Feather River not being an area of importance, but you were scored on the questions to the specific questions, or the answers to the specific questions. So... you know, the score here is reflective of how the explanation was provided on how what your benefit, how it's connecting to these existing conservation efforts and conservation in the locations.
Okay. Very good. Are we ready to move on from the REV to the public benefit ratio, non-monetized public benefit? Okay, great. Amy, go ahead.
Okay. So we're going to talk about public benefit ratio and non-monetized benefits. The public benefit ratio itself was determined by taking the Commission's accepted PBR from the May 1-3 meeting and normalizing it. The non-monetized benefits were evaluated in two ways. If the application specified an emergency response, recreation, or flood benefit as non-monetized, it was evaluated for these points. For any ecosystem or water quality non-monetized benefits, those were, of course, evaluated in the REV analysis. The regulations in Section 6004 required the applicant to provide supporting information for those emergency response, recreation, or flood benefits that were non-monetized. The Commission has the ability to adjust the score in the June meeting up or down 1 point if they find that the review comments are inconsistent. So do you have any questions about non-monetized benefits?
Yes. In regards to the emergency response, the comment made in the review was that insufficient qualitative description. Just the question as is, what sort of information clarification could we provide to qualify this this information into the review?
Okay, so we have Eric Wolf can hopefully answer your question.
Is the red light on, Eric? It's on? Okay.
There we go.
Great.
Okay. Oh, got to get close. In regards to the qualitative, I'll just back up a little bit. Basically, in emergency response, there was two sections, 6004 subdivision A4 and 6007 subdivision B1D, and we used those to kind of break down how we evaluated all the projects. And so in doing so, there basically came out seven areas that we looked at it to try to provide the applicant points. And so the first one was being justification of why the benefit cannot be monetized, which you performed well on and got a point for. The second one was qualitative description of the importance of the benefit and who's affected, how, and how often. That one you did not provide or get a point because we felt that it wasn't, as you asked, what substitutes a qualitative. I think a quantitative, there's some of that in it. What cities are affected, approximately how many people. It's really hard to subjective answer to kind of put in there, but and I'll continue going. Evidence to show how physical change is beneficial and important to Californians. That's another one. Which Californians? Two of us or the whole state? That one, no point there. Operations plan, yes, you lay it out exactly with existing infrastructure and proposed infrastructure, how this was going to move. That was definitely adequate. Modeling and analytical methods and results, no point was given there. Magnitude of benefits claim, definitely. The biggest one I concentrated on was life safety and the benefit of this project for that. So I took a lot of the information that perhaps is in a qualitative and applied that to the magnitude. And then the last one is the quality of analysis. Was it completely 100% thorough? So that's kind of the background on it and how we broke it up for all the to apply to all the projects. So
appreciate it. Thank you. I would just add that our June 4th letter sort of describes the value that the 50,000 acre foot of emergency supply provides for San Bernardino County and essentially all of Southern California in regards to its location, the flexibility of moving that molecule through these various regional infrastructure conveyance systems. If that letter could be considered and the material in there to help clarify sort of the qualitative aspect of this, we would appreciate that. Thank you. So I think that's all we had for the non-monetized, but
sure. Well, we can, if you have other questions, you'd like to circle back on other component scores, or we can hear about the June meeting and then circle back to questions if you'd like. Hear about the June meeting and then circle back to questions?
Well,
or Roger,
you got
one more.
Yeah,
good,
just one
good.
One final comment.
Great.
Going back to the uncertainty component. I just want to reiterate a couple of things because that one's really important to us. They all are, but this one in particular. I'll try to end this with a question, but I'll make a few comments first. Just want to reiterate that the production, and I think I want to make these points because maybe there's a little bit of question about the reliability of the supply that would be available to meet the public benefits, and so I want to get to that. But I want to point out again that the production of the project's water supply is highly resilient and independent of hydrology in our view, and so little to no uncertainty because of that. And to address the questions of how will the benefits be provided, we just ask that the commission consider both that fact, the resiliency and reliability of the project water supply, but also the subsequent analysis that we shared in the appeal letter, which described the nature of the state water project allocations in dry and critical years and how supply would be available for that exchange in what we find to be all years except perhaps 1 year out of the CalSIM simulation periods for both 2030 and 2070, as well as the 2070 extreme dry and extreme wet conditions. Those actually show that 5% allocation would occur in all years. And so that that's kind of the limiting factor for being able to make that exchange occur, and then that resulting pulse flow be available in the Feather River to provide the public benefits that we described in the application, as well as other benefits like water quality in Southern California in the Chino Basin. So again, just ask that the commission consider those as clarifications.
It sounds like it might be time now to hear about the commission meeting, since you've outlined some considerations.
The commission meeting will be June 27th through 29th, and we're still forming the agenda, which we will release on June 15th, but each applicant will have will follow the following format. We will have a staff presentation followed by a applicant presentation followed by public comment, and similar to what we did in May, we will allow for pooled public comment, and then we'll have commission discussion and action on the final scores and the determination information. It's looking like it will be 2.5 days. And as I said, we will post the agenda on the 15th with all the specifics of the format details and deadlines for getting comment letters and presentations in, if they're pooled commenters who are wanting to use presentations or comment letters. Probably we'll have that deadline be Friday, 5 p.m. the week before.
Thank you, Jennifer. Any follow-up questions on the June commission meeting?
Well, we think we know the answer, but so there's between now and the June 27th, 29th meeting, there's not going to be another opportunity for discussions like this. Just want to clarify.
So when we notified folks that we wouldn't get the determination information out until the 15th, I think we are thinking about how we can have an interaction regarding the information that we'll release on the 15th. So there probably is at least one more opportunity before the commission meeting to ask us questions. I don't have any of the details around how that interaction would occur. It might be a conference call or a webinar type thing, more than making these kinds of arrangements to do something in person. But there should be an interaction around the determination information that we'll release on the 15th.
Great. Thank you.
So we have about 7 minutes left in our allotted time, and that's your time. So if you want to take a moment to look at your notes, we will be here until 12:30.
I just got another question texted to me. It's a simple one. So on the 27th to 29th, presentations would be limited to 15 minutes, or is that not yet determined yet by the applicant?
We haven't quite determined that yet, but I would guess 15 to 20 minutes would be the maximum. And because we are looking at a staff presentation, applicant presentation, public comment, commission discussion, roughly 1.5 hours per project, we're guessing. So you should plan on the 15-minute range. We'll let you know once we firm that up.
For a minute.
No problem.
At the next round of meetings, how is the commission going to arrive at determinations? Is it going to be similar to our last meetings where it's going to be discussion? Is there going to be a criteria they're going to use to come up with where their determinations are going to fall?
So the determinations are theirs to make. We will provide the commission what we think is a synopsis of the information in your applications and the materials we have so far regarding those 9 determinations. And then they're free to ask you questions and stakeholders questions or hear the public comments that are made, and then they will have a discussion and make their determination. I mean, that's basically the modality of it.
Yeah, I guess as part of that question is, will staff either alter recommendations between now and then, or is what we're seeing here today what will go forward to the commission, or is there going to be any...
Well, you haven't seen the information that will go to the commission. We'll release that on the 15th. So
correct, yes.
So as I stated at the beginning, we are not looking to change what we released on the 25th between now and the commission meeting. That discussion really has to happen at the commission meeting.
Appreciate this opportunity. Thank you for this interactive process, and we know the complexity behind this and the severe importance for California water systems, so we appreciate this time and definitely look forward to continued discussions. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much for coming in. For folks who are tuning in online, we will reconvene at 1:30 p.m. All right, so it is 1:31. We are starting just a minute late, so we'll certainly go over 1 minute for you. Again, I'm Nora DeCure. I'm with Kearns and West helping to facilitate the meeting today. Primarily, that means helping us keep track of time and ensure that we have adequate space for the questions today. We do have a webcast running. We are being recorded, and we will have an opportunity for folks to submit questions online. So I will run through some meeting guidelines and logistics to that end right now. And folks in the room, you have a copy of this in front of you. Members of the public are welcome to attend and observe these application sessions focused on component scores and to ask questions related to component scores during the designated discussion period, subject to the guidelines and requests from the facilitator. We have about 50 minutes today. We will run through that in approximately 10-minute increments for each of the component scores. And Brianna will help to represent folks who may be submitting questions online. I do want to remind folks that we are going to focus on clarifying questions rather than comments, and that this period of time is not intended for interrogation, debate, or argument between participants. And 50 minutes isn't a lot of time, so we'll ask folks to please be concise and help us to get to that question. If you are participating online, you may submit your question to cwc@water.ca.gov, and we will make an attempt to get to those in first-come, first-serve order. Brianna will represent those to me here in the room, and Mark and Melissa, I understand that you have potentially some team members who may be listening in online, and so, like we discussed, if they'd like to submit a question either to Brianna or to one of you, that's great, and we will work with that. And I think finally, since we have a few new faces, let's do a quick round of introductions. So Brianna, if we can start with you, we'll go through this table, then the staff table, then we'll work through the rest of the room.
I'm Brianna Shoemaker. I'm with the California Water Commission.
And a red light means on after you press the button. There we go.
I'm Mark Bueller, General Manager of the Willow Springs Water Bank.
Melissa Cansdale, GEI Consultants.
Mark Ashenfelter, GEI.
Holly Stout, Counsel for the Water Commission.
Joe Young, of Water Commission.
Amy Young, Water Commission.
Shem Steiger, DWR.
Crystal Davis-Vatke, California Department of Fish and Wildlife.
Steve Hatchett, Economic Consultant to the Water Commission.
Brandon.
Brandon Amrine, Department of Fish and Wildlife.
Jennifer Ruffalo, Water Commission.
Roger Mann, Economics Consultant for the Water Commission.
We can go to Jennifer. Or Jennifer. And Micah and Scott.
Micah Green, Fish and Wildlife.
Scott Control, Fish and Wildlife.
Thank you all. Okay, so I think Joe will make a brief comment, and then we'll turn it over to Amy to take us through the scores.
So I just wanted to make a couple of points. As in previous meetings that we've had with applicants, we are not looking for accepting new information in this meeting. We are not looking to change the information that we released on the 25th before the commission meeting. Really, if there's any score changes, those will be done at the commission meeting. We are happy to look at information that is in the existing application or in the existing information that we have if you are pointing to something that we may have missed. So we're happy to look at that and bring that into the commission meeting and render our opinion to the commission there. The other thing that I would point out to folks is earlier this week we let applicants know that the information for the commission determinations would be released on the 15th. On one of your handouts that you have before you, there's a sheet that has kind of the commission discretion on component scores, and it has also listed out those determinations that the commission must make at the next meeting, and so at least you know what types of information we'll be releasing on the 15th. We will endeavor to set up some kind of interaction after the 15th, so you may ask us questions about the information that we release on the 15th, but we're still working on that. So with that, we can move right into the topics at hand.
Okay, good afternoon. So we're going to talk about implementation risk score first. Reviewers looked at the likelihood of the project being built or operated and gave an implementation risk score for four categories of feasibility, including technical, financial, economic, and environmental. The reviewers were instructed by the regulations to look at the schedule and the feasibility component requirements that were in the technical reference. For technical feasibility, the reviewers looked at the operations plan, any design information, project description, schedule, and anything else that was relevant to determine the risk that the project could be physically built or could be built and operated. For financial feasibility, the reviewers looked at the risk that there would be sufficient funds to cover the construction and operation of the project. And for environmental or economic feasibility, reviewers looked at whether the expected benefits equal or exceed the expected costs, which is the BC ratio. For environmental feasibility, reviewers looked at the status and schedule of the environmental document and permits, as well as significant issues of the project. Each of these items were given a score of 1 to 5 based on the risk of being able to build and operate the project. For projects that had a component showing a high risk, they received 1 point, and for projects with a low risk and well-supported documentation, up to 5 points could be allocated. These scores were added and then normalized to 15 points possible. The commission, at its meeting at the end of June, has the discretion to adjust this category up or down 4 points if the reviewer comments are not consistent with the recommended score. So with that, we will open it up for any questions you have on implementation risk.
I've got a couple of questions to ask here. We got full credit for the technical feasibility, so we don't have any questions there. Financial feasibility. We weren't sure how to demonstrate that. As far as I can tell, there's not a requirement for a financial plan. There's an economic plan, which we submitted, but there's no financial plan. And we thought that referring to the fact that CalPERS is the investor behind our project ought to demonstrate that we have access to very large amounts of capital if we need it. I might also add, we didn't include this in the application, but a separate issue is that the company I work for, CIM Group, manages assets for a variety of pension funds. In fact, they manage a total of about $27 billion worth of assets nationwide. And so there wasn't really a forum to express that, and so we didn't. And that may have been a mistake in the application, but we did refer to CalPERS, and so it seems like a low score given the high degree of financial capability of the backers behind this project. So I guess that's as much a comment as a question. The question there is there any other way to introduce that information at this point, or is that water under the bridge?
I can...
Okay, yes, Steve. Thank you, Steve.
Okay. Sort of a general response, and I think Joe mentioned this, is that we're not accepting new information for our staff review at this point. You, of course, can express whatever you feel is appropriate to the commission, but as far as staff review, we are not accepting new information.
So that's off the table?
Correct.
Okay. Second point is that...
Let me just clarify. Sorry, Mark. Let me just clarify. It's off the table for this discussion, but I want to kind of elaborate a little bit on what Steve was saying, and we'll get into what the June meetings are going to be at the end. But you can, of course, present whatever you would like to the commission itself, and the commission may consider that information. We can't. That's where it's off the table. It's off the table for staff. It's not off the table like it doesn't exist. Is that helpful?
That is.
Okay.
Thank you. A second comment is a little later on in the text, also under financial feasibility, there's a description of the fact that we reduced our request for funding from $306 million in our original application to $123 million after the May meetings. It's based on our eligible amount. The question we'd have is, we absolutely have a plan for how we're going to reconfigure the finances of our project, but we just didn't see any opportunity to give that to you. What is the opportunity to say, okay, the original project we submitted was $306 million. That's one project. We've reconfigured it to make it work with $123 million. And the primary mechanism we're going to use there is to take your suggestion about tying our project and the yield to purchase of voluntary transfers. We fully intend to do that. We don't have enough grant money in play to do the original proposal, which was to go out and or to create yield and use that for the fish. Instead, we will go out per your suggestion and purchase voluntary transfer water. And as a result, that significantly changes our financial plans. So my question is this, where's the opportunity for us to reconfigure our financial plan and tell you how we intend to do it?
Well, I think you could go back to what Holly just said, we couldn't review or take any new information during this part of the process, but you can go to the commission. Looking ahead, after MCED. Yeah. Look, after the, for projects that do continue forward after MCED, there are additional requirements to enter into funding agreements that that deal with financial information. Okay. And the regulations have specific information about that.
Okay. Yeah, and we've looked at the regulation. When mm-hmm. we get to the point of signing a finance agreement, we obviously understand we've got to provide our audited financials, mm-hmm. and we can and will do that when the time comes. We just didn't see much of an opportunity, with maybe the exception of what you're suggesting, which is the commission meeting coming up at the end of the month. We could hopefully make the case then. Economic feasibility, actually, the question I have there is probably has the same answer to the one you just addressed. We don't think that the benefit-cost ratio listed there applies anymore. But in order to demonstrate that, what we've got to do is say, here's how we're going to adjust the project to reflect the change in the amount of grant availability. And we can and will do that, but correct me if I'm wrong, but it sounds like the opportunity is at the end of June meetings, not now. Is that correct?
I would say that's correct. Okay. Yeah.
Then one final comment, and then I'm going to turn it over to see if Melissa or Mark have any questions. On the environmental feasibility component, one of the words that stuck out is, and I'll just read it here, however, the applicant appears to have completed its CEQA compliance. And from our perspective, there's no appearance here. We have. And the question is, are the documents that we gave you sufficient such that you can draw the same conclusion? And I'll cite that because there are actually a couple more documents that we've got in our files that might help you understand why it is CEQA is done for us. We did that back in 2006. The one piece that you didn't have was the original draft CEQA document became the accepted Kern County CEQA documentation for the entire project. Now, we have the verification from Kern County that they've accepted the draft EIR. So my question is this. We have it. We just assumed that it was understood that it's a finalized document, and it's recorded with the State Clearinghouse based on this decision by Kern County. So what else do we need to do? Do you need these additional documents, which is the actual approval letter from Kern County saying the draft EIR is approved as final?
Well, at this point, we can't accept anything that was not already included in the application. I think the reviewers assumed that it was completed because there were statements in the application that said that it was completed. That information just wasn't included in the application package. But I don't know that really affected the risk itself so much as some of the other items that were indicated in the review.
Yeah. It's the word apparent that jumped out
right.
at us.
Only because it wasn't actually in the submitted application materials. It had to be assumed that was the case.
And that's all I have. Melissa? I think we're ready to move on to the next item.
Great. So, Amy, go ahead with resiliency.
Resiliency. Reviewers looked at quite a few areas to score resiliency. They looked at the project description, preliminary operations plan, the executive summary, and, of course, the uncertainty analysis. The reviewers evaluated the application materials to determine if the project provides integration and added system flexibility, as well as if the project maintains or increases public benefits in a variety of conditions, and as also if the project provides high levels of water stored in the system during a drought. Reviewers gave up to 10 points for integration and flexibility and up to 15 points for how the project performs in those future scenarios. This scoring component was worth a total of 25 points. The commission at their meeting in June has the ability to adjust the score up or down 6 points. And they can make this adjustment if the reviewer comments are not consistent with the recommended score. And so, do you have any questions about resiliency? And Shem Steiger next to me is available if you do have any.
Sorry. We've got a couple questions here, but not a whole lot. But before we get into that, just a quick question. The issue of relative environmental value, is that coming up today, or is that not on the table?
That's next up after we talk about resiliency.
Okay.
Yeah. If you think you need more time to go over relative environmental value, we
can do that first.
Yeah.
If you would prefer.
Our only comment on resiliency has to do with the very last paragraph. And it's probably easier if I just read it. The amount of water stored in the water system due to the project that could be used for public benefits at the beginning and end of a 5-year drought. In other words, it's calling out specific language in the regulation. And we didn't address that. And the reason we didn't address it is because we took no monetary credit for public benefits for water available during a drought. We only took credit for water available after Delta levee failures. And so my question is, where in the regulation does it say you have to have water for a drought as a public benefit?
Shem is doing a little bit of quick research.
Under, pardon me, under Regulation Section 6004A8D, it specifically asks for water available at the beginning and end of a 5-year drought.
If I could add to that, that's different than whether you claim drought benefit as a public benefit. You're right. You're not required to claim any of the drought water supply as a public benefit. Nevertheless, this is a separate requirement just to see whether this relates to this just relates to the amount of water in storage at the beginning and end of a particular defined drought period, whether that water is used for public benefit or non-public benefit.
Right. It was part in the regulations. It's part of the sources of uncertainty analysis that we had in Section 6004. That was an element of information that we had asked for.
So just so it's clear in my mind then, independent of whether or not we took a public benefit credit for this, we should have had in the application a description of how we perform in a 5-year drought. Is that correct?
That's my understanding. Now, this section of the regulation is not my area of expertise. I was just making a distinction between what's needed for a certain public benefit demonstration versus this. Yes.
Yes, we looked at each application as it relates to each of these four criteria, and if it's not described, then we couldn't score it accordingly.
Okay. And again, if we have a different interpretation of things, the appropriate forum is the commission?
I think that would be correct, that you may approach the commission with any comments that you would like. I would point out that, yeah, in our regulations, this was a requirement, and that's.
That's all I have on resiliency, unless somebody else has. No, we're done with resiliency. Go ahead.
All right, next up is relative environmental value. The regulations required that for the project's ecosystem benefit, a priority or priorities had to be identified and a worksheet completed for each of them. In the same way, if a project had water quality benefits, a priority had to be identified for that and a table completed. All projects had ecosystem benefits were scored by Fish and Wildlife and received a relative environmental value, as was the same with the State Water Board. Both agencies reviewed the worksheets and tables as well as the supporting documentation and applied a REV criteria to each priority claimed to come up with a REV score. These scores were combined for a total of 27 points. The split between ecosystem and water quality was 70-30, and then those scores were then normalized to 27 points. The commission does not have the ability to change the score at their June meeting, but they may ask questions about the analysis. And your project had, I believe, only ecosystem of REV. And so Crystal's here to answer any questions you have about that.
Okay. Yeah, I do. If the commission's not making any changes, I guess this is procedural, then just the discussion we have here today is all that can be changed upon, or is that not even open to discussion?
Well, we can't make any changes to any of the scores ourselves today. That is correct.
And if I'm hearing that right, the commission won't be making any changes either.
So there are categories of the score where the commission, by the regulations, has discretion to make changes. The REV scores are not one of those places. But what the commission can do is, of course, ask the agencies that came up with the REV scores how they can inquire based on whatever you might present and engage in a conversation with Fish and Wildlife or State Water Board, if as applicable.
Okay. My question comment, though, I guess you guys might be able to guess where I go with this, is regarding the scoring on, what is that, Rev 2, Rev 3, and the what appears to be removal of points based on timing with the hatchery smolts. Nowhere have I seen any distinction before now made between the hatchery and the natural in-river production. It's a bit of a circular argument with adaptive management stating that based on monitoring, that this could all be changed to fit the needs of the in-river production should that be a more prioritized goal for the system. I don't know how that was incorporated or whether it was whether that was where points were removed. I guess the question would be, where were points removed on that in relation to the timing?
The score is an average of multiple reviewers, and the comments are a synthesis of numerous comments around this. I think in your application,
You know, you speak to providing benefit for natural and wild stock, and you know there's comments in here. I wouldn't necessarily say I can't tell you point wise what was removed for what specific piece. These scores are a reflection of how reviewers looked at your worksheet, the answers you provided, the analysis you conducted, the change between with and without project conditions.
I guess on procedure then, you had multiple reviewers review
yes.
each. Did you take a high end, a mean? How was the score then ultimately incorporated into a final score?
We took the mean.
It was a mean?
Mm-hmm.
Was that true of all categories?
For every priority, for every project across the board.
Okay.
Oh, I apologize, just a time check.
That was all.
Okay.
No, we're ready to go on.
Okay, the last category is the public benefit ratio and non-monetized benefits. The PBR is determined by taking the commission's accepted PBR number from the May 1st through 3rd meeting and normalizing it. Non-monetized benefits were evaluated in two ways. If the application identified an emergency response, a recreation, or a flood benefit as a non-monetized benefit, it was evaluated for these bonus points. For ecosystem and water quality non-monetized benefits, those were, of course, reviewed under the REV analysis. So at the June meeting, the commission has the ability to adjust the non-monetized benefit score up or down by 1 point if they find that the review comments are consistent. And so I guess, do you have any questions about non-monetized benefits?
No, I don't think so. So just so I can feed it back, make sure I've got it straight. The portion that's regarding the monetized part of the public benefit ratio, that's off the table now. That
was taken
adjusted.
Care of in the PBR meetings.
Okay, but for the component that was the non-monetized benefit, there's the potential to adjust plus or minus a point.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't have anything else. Yes. I think we're done. I do have another question, but there's not really an obvious call-out spot here. Can I just go ahead and ask?
Absolutely.
We're having difficulty determining if, assuming that the rank two projects all get fully funded, they all get their eligible amounts, the rank three projects get what's left over. There's going to be a shortfall. How will you split the shortfall?
Not a second. Sorry.
I'll take the previous point. One thing that, as Joe's recovering from a sudden coughing fit, that we should make clear is that the adjustment that the commission can make within the regulation without sending it back to staff is plus or minus 25% on any of these. If they would like to make it for more than 25%, they can direct staff to go back and relook and see if that's warranted. So that was just a little clarification that Joe and I talked about. So if a project had I'm going to take this out of your project, if there was a resiliency score that the commission thought was really inappropriately high or inappropriately low and they wanted to adjust it more than the 25% provided in the regulations, they would send it back to staff to evaluate. That's part of the reason we're going to probably end up with a 3-day meeting. So, Just wanted to clarify that. You recovered?
I think I'm okay now. Sorry about that. So the way the regulations are written, it is really up to the commission to decide how they treat rank three projects. So they will look at the rank three projects, decide how much money they have to distribute, and then it's really up to them on how they do that. The staff in the regulations doesn't even make any kind of recommendation to the commission on rank three.
So again, just to make sure we've got it straight, there is no fixed process set in the regulation. If there's a shortfall, it goes back to the commission, and the commission uses its discretion, and the points per category aren't the only criterion they can use. They have the option of sending it back to staff and saying, redo this and come back with additional information.
I think we need to take this a little bit linearly, if that's the right word, and say when we're looking at points in June, the commission has the specific discretion of point values on the non-monetized benefit, the resiliency and implementation risk components. Anything beyond that, they can talk to staff and send something back to staff for staff to reevaluate and bring back. And that's where I think Holly was articulating under the REV score, we may have a conversation at the commission meeting and they can ask questions about that. They just have no discrete point values to say we're just going to shift this up and down. They would have to have grounds to have staff reevaluate or relook at something and make that request to staff.
Okay.
Can I see the? And then once the scores are determined, the commission will come back, we'll go put everything in ranks and bring back to the commission in July those ranks, and then the commission has the job of doing their maximum conditional eligibility determinations in July, and that's where they'll talk about rank three projects.
I think we're done with that piece. I just had a comment that came in from one of our other team members who couldn't make it today. Can I just kind of read that? And it actually ties back into an earlier topic we were talking about. This is from Mark Williamson, and his comment is that the five-year drought supply was evaluated in Section 6-12, page 4 of our original application. So I guess what he's getting at there is we think that we did address it, and you probably have that same comment that came in online.
Okay, great.
Okay, so I guess it ties back to the question of we think we addressed the five-year drought component. What's the explanation for why we didn't?
I don't have your original application in front of me in order to be able to speak to that.
Neither do I, but I'm sure Williamson right. does.
So, I mean, that is something that if you're pointing that out, that we can go back and take a look at and then come to the commission meeting with it.
That may be the best way to handle it. Honestly, I don't have the wording in front of me either right now, but that's one of the advantages of somebody who's sitting in a separate room with their own computer in front of them.
And did you, Shem or Amy, did you want Mark to read out the page number again?
I think
we
got it 6-12, page 4.
That's correct.
And I think we received it email. So.
Okay, very good.
I think we may have covered everything.
Well, one thing we can do is we can have Jennifer tell us a little bit more about the June commission meeting, and then if you think of anything else following that,
please,
we can circle
please.
Back.
We are putting the agenda together for the June 27th to 29th meeting, and right now it's looking like we will take up each application separately. There will be a staff presentation, followed by an applicant presentation, followed by public comment, and we will allow the same type of pooled public comments that we did for the May meeting on PBRs, and then commission deliberation and decision on the final scores and the determinations. We are getting good input from all the applicants so far today, and we expect more input from the others tomorrow, so that will probably influence how we structure the agenda. What I can say for sure is that there will be an opportunity for an applicant presentation of 15 to 20 minutes, most likely. We'll let you know when we get closer to the final format of the agenda what that time limit will be, and we will publish the agenda on the 15th.
So for the meetings at the end of June, is it anticipated that all we would have is a PowerPoint, or do we have an opportunity to submit written documentation at that point?
I think you can submit written documentation, and I think our cutoff date would be the Friday before at 5 p.m. for distribution to the commissioners. I'll let Joe respond to that if you're talking about some more substantive information that you're perhaps referring to earlier.
Well, I would just add that, we can't limit what you wish to bring to the commission. I mean, I think that's the bottom line. So if you walked in with something, we're not going to tell you can't give it to the commissioners. I think we would ask the courtesy of getting it in early enough so we could distribute it to the commissioners. That would be helpful.
So if I could reiterate what I think I heard, you're not telling us what we can or can't bring to the commission. But what you are saying is you'd appreciate the courtesy of seeing whatever we plan to bring in advance.
Yeah, if we can distribute it to the commissioners in their packages, it may be simpler. Yeah.
Okay, that's fair. I don't have any questions. Anybody? Go ahead.
My question is, would staff be distributing their PowerPoints to the applicants prior to the meeting?
Yeah, I mean, I think our intent is to make sure that we have our stuff before the meeting as well to distribute in post.
Related question, does that mean then we get advanced information about what your staff's going to be presenting?
I think that was the question, right?
Okay. I just want to clarify.
Okay. Just checking. So we will put out what we are presenting to the commission as soon as we can. Again, we will be going over what we released on May 25th in presenting that information. Certainly, if we are doing anything different in terms of PowerPoints and any of that, we will get that up.
Okay. We're not planning to do anything different based on that. We just like to know.
Right.
I think we're done with our questions. Do you have anything for us?
I believe I have an answer to your question about the five-year drought. So we were looking specifically for storage of water available for public benefits at the beginning and end, and it's not explicitly stated. You just kind of generally describe how much water is available. So how that is stored in the system or where it is or what it's doing isn't clear when we're doing the scoring of the application.
I think that's all we have.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Mark. We do have a few more minutes, so don't feel like you need to wrap up if you need a moment to reconvene with your team. But we're also happy. Yeah, one moment. Okay.
What happens if down the line, if other projects start dropping out or found, if
for one reason or another are no longer in the process, does, after funding decisions are made, where, what happens with that? Does it reopen a competitive process, or how is that going to be handled?
Yeah, the commission will probably need to have a discussion and make some decisions regarding what they would like to see in terms of what I call the what ifs, you know, in the eventuality, or if something were to happen to one of the projects and funds became available, what would happen? I mean, I think that's what you're asking. And so that would have to be something the commission discusses and makes some decisions on about what they would like to see. The regulations are silent in terms of that case. Right. So I think that's what will happen, and that may be something that the commission takes up at a future meeting.
I do have one more thing, and it has to do with the the collective suite of projects. This is in the regulation, section 6011, and it's item H1B. And here's the question. We think there is a potential collective suite of projects that we could propose. The problem is that at this point, it's hard to see how any of the other applicants would like to throw in with us, because we're still in competition. Do you have any thoughts on how it is we propose a collective approach but don't impair potentially our partners' ability to get more grant money? I don't know if I'm being clear, but the problem is we're not done with the competition yet, so how can we put together a collective suite of projects?
Well, the specific piece of regulations that you're pointing to are really talking about what the commission considers in making their MCED, right? I mean, that's how this is laid out. And so the opportunity there, I think, is in July in front of the commission to have a discussion of how they are processing and making their MCED decisions. And I'm not sure that it's so much written in a way that it would provide you the opportunity necessarily to I don't know, yeah, necessarily have to collaborate with people in competition right now. I think it's a matter of talking with the commission in July and really entering into the conversation that they would like to have in terms of how, if their decisions on those rank three projects are about how much and which projects may receive funding, I think that's a discussion that they are willing and able to have with those rank three applicants at that time. And so it's really talking about how some of the considerations that they would have to make, and that may help you formulate how you wish to speak to them in July.
Yeah, I think you've actually answered my question.
Okay.
Because I just don't see us practically putting together a suite of projects while the scores are still being adjusted.
Yeah,
but afterwards.
I don't think that's the intent of the way this is written.
Okay. Because we fully want to do that. We just don't see it happening in June. I think that's it.
Okay, very good. Well, thank you all for being here. For those folks who are tuning in online, we will convene again tomorrow.